Good afternoon, and welcome to Spokane Public Radio's Northwest Arts Review, a half hour exploring the people, places, and events forming the rich arts tapestry we enjoy here in the Inland Northwest and our wider Intermountain Northwest region. I'm Jim Tevenin, pleased to be your guide on this journey. Today, hopeful stories from two regional arts organizations, as we hear from Mike Farians from the Liberty Theater in Dayton, Washington, and Chuck Etheridge at the Coeur d'Alene Summer Theater. Dan Webster drops by as well for a film review. Our music in and out is from one of our KPBX family, Kevin Brown, host of Front Porch Bluegrass. It's a selection from his new album, Heroes and Sparrows. This is Northwest Arts Review. The Liberty Theater in Dayton, Washington, has been a Touche Valley landmark and institution since the early 20th century. It's witnessed countless films, stage productions, and community events. Like all arts entities, it has been severely stressed in this unique time in our history. Spokane Public Radio News Director Doug Nadvornik reached out to theater manager Mike Farians.
My name is Mike Farians. I am the manager of the Liberty Theater in Dayton, which is owned and operated by Touche Valley Arts Council. It opened early in the 20th century, as many small community theaters did. It was just a cinema house, just a movie house. And after World War I, it was renamed Liberty Theater, as were many theaters across the country. And then it went through a fire and was rebuilt and operated pretty steadily through the 60s, early 70s. And then it began to go downhill. It was shuttered for many years. And then in the mid 80s, when the Dayton community began its downtown revitalization, that got underway, then they began picking projects for restoration and beautification. Their first big project was to restore to its original grandeur the Columbia County Courthouse, which is the oldest continually operating courthouse in Washington State. And then their second project right across the street was the Liberty Theater. And so in 1996, TVAC was formed. In 2001, the theater opened to its first live production. And so it is, for 20 years, it's been a community theater, as well as a movie house, and a central location for arts and culture and civic events. We like to think of it as the gem of Main Street, but it has become a community building with many uses. Its primary programming is in live theater and cinema, but civic events are held there, business meetings are held there, candidates forums, family reunions. We've even had a couple of weddings in there. So it's just been a community center, with our primary mission being arts and culture. Like a lot of businesses, quote unquote, whether they're retail or nonprofit or whatever, we've had to just move to maintaining our identity and communicating our sense of purpose and connecting with our patrons and friends online and social media and primarily and through the website, through the local papers, just keeping folks updated on both what it's like to be shut down during this time, but also what we're doing to garner support and just try to stay connected to our community while we await the possibilities of reopening.
Good news for the Liberty came in the form of one of the federal government's CARES grants. CARES is the acronym for Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act.
Well, fortunately, it comes to us as general operating funds or unrestricted funds. And so it helps us to pay the bills, so to speak. We still have occupancy costs related to just keeping the building in a basic functioning mode against that day when we can open again. And the board is continuing to pay its staff, to retain the staff so that we can keep watch over things, do the little bit of administrative work that we can do, and roll out the projections for reopening and be ready to go. That money helps to ensure that we're going to be financially stable for the coming months and into next year, not knowing what's going to happen, how things are going to look.
Like all businesses, the Liberty Theater is anxious to begin the reopening process. Mike Farians shared these tentative plans.
Yeah, so the rollout is sort of a double-sided thing. We get permission, and then individual businesses and whatnot have to verify their compliance in order to get actual permission to open up. The same process, I suspect, will go on in phase three when the state allows us to move to phase three, assuming everything goes okay in phase two. Then I assume we will have to verify compliance with, you know, whatever protocols are deemed necessary for the reopening of a place like the theater. And then we'll just start running some test things. If we are able to open by July 1st, then we would go ahead with our summer programming, which involves what we call our summer children's enrichment program. That involves some kids' films that we run in a series at a very, very low admission price, and then bringing in the Missoula Children's Theater in first week in August, which we always do. And so we're hoping that's our next projection, is that we'll be open in July for that. And we will have to operate in a buffered seating capacity, or in other words, 50% seating capacity, with all of the enhanced protocols and procedures for making sure that folks know we're being conscientious about their safety.
As many arts institutions in our region, the Liberty Theater reports ongoing support from its community.
We continue to receive support in terms of financial donations from folks in the community of all amounts, and so people are sticking with us and believe in us, and we really appreciate the support, as well as the sort of morale boosts and encouragement that we get from folks. It makes a difference.
More information about Dayton's Liberty Theater, including many production photos, is at their website, daytontheater.org. I'm Jim Tevenin, and this is Northwest Arts Review. Check out podcasts of this and previous programs on the Northwest Arts Review page at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Dan Webster is here with his review of Portrait of a Lady on Fire, a study of perseverance in a time of gender inequity.
In These Truths, A History of the United States, author Jill Lepore attempts to address all those aspects of American history that, until now, have been paid little attention to by historians. As Lepore pointed out in Newsweek magazine, one of the most glaring topics lacking in most American history books involves women. There's some twee nonsense about Abigail Adams, and then Betty Friedan and Gloria Steinem make a cameo appearance, Lepore said. That's the end of our story. It's a complete dismissal of women as political actors and historical actors. Not that the U.S. owns a monopoly on such attitudes. Though there are exceptions, the general rule of most societies over time has been that men act and women support them as they do so, or not, depending on the situation, of course. Either way, as Lepore contends, the story of history centers mostly on men, which is largely why the last few years have been so illuminating in society at large, but especially notable to those of us who spend a lot of time watching movies. Not only have more and more women found their voice in film, with filmmakers such as Kelly Reichardt, Greta Gerwig, and Patty Jenkins joining the likes of such veterans as Jane Campion and Agnes Varda, the subjects they explore have demonstrated a distinct woman's touch. Take Portrait of a Lady on Fire, written and directed by French filmmaker Céline Sciamma, which is available to stream through Hulu. In one sense, it's a story that focuses on what long has been considered a forbidden kind of love. Yet in another, it's a searing study of the difficulties faced by women who, throughout the centuries, have longed to pursue lives on their own terms. Set in the late 18th century, Sciamma's film focuses on two women of vastly different means. Marianne, played by Noémie Merlant, is a painter, an independent woman attempting to make her way in an art world unsurprisingly dominated by men. Heloise, played by Adele Hanel, is a woman of higher social standing who has been torn away from a convent and, because of the mysterious death of her sister, has been promised in marriage to a nobleman from Milan. Heloise's betrothal has been arranged by a mother, played by Valerie Galino, and she rebels against the plan by refusing to pose for her portrait, which her mother has promised to send to the would-be groom. Seems the nobleman, no fool he, wants to have at least some idea of what he is in all but name purchasing. So the mother comes up with a plan. Hire Marianne under the guise of her being Heloise's companion. Have her join Heloise on walks along the same cliffs from which her sister fell, or perhaps from which she leaped. In her downtime, Marianne would then construct the portrait from memory. Not all goes as planned, though, as the two young women fall in love, or lust, however you want to describe it, and as they engage in mutually satisfying bouts of passion, Marianne's attempts to capture her newfound lover on canvas change accordingly. That there can be no traditional happy ending is clear from the start, as Shama tells her film in flashback, years after the fact, from Marianne's point of view. In one interview, Shama made it clear that she purposely didn't want a finale that was either frozen in time happy or tragic. Our great loves are a condition of our future love, she said. The film is the memory of a love story. It's sad, but also full of hope. Yet that break from pop filmmaking doesn't make what Shama has created any less poignant. On the contrary, it enhances the feeling. From the soulful gaze of her film's two protagonists to the repeated references to women bemoaning the powerlessness of their positions, Shama's Portrait of a Lady on Fire is a testament to the depths of feminine desire. The kind of desire that, applied not just to notions of love, but to everything that life has to offer, can no longer be ignored. For Spokane Public Radio, I'm Dan Webster.
Dan Webster writes about movies and more for Spokane7.com. Another annual season marker is the first summer theater offerings. Sadly, they are not happening in any sort of regular way this year. We checked in with Chuck Etheridge, Artistic Associate at Coeur d'Alene Summer Theater, about how they are faring. Before that conversation, though, here is a bit of nostalgia. From last summer's Coeur d'Alene Summer Theater production of Beauty and the Beast, this is Adelaide Turnage and pianist Annie Flood with the song Home.
Yes, I made the choice. For Papa, I will stay. But I don't deserve to lose my freedom in this way, you monster. If you think that what you've done is right, well then, you're a fool. Think again. Is this home? Is this where I should learn to be happy? Dreamed that a home could be dark and cold. I was told every day in my childhood, even when we grow old, home should be where the heart is. Never were words so true. My heart's far, far away. Change again.
I'm talking today with Chuck Etheridge, who is the artistic associate at Coeur d'Alene Summer Theater. And Chuck has been in our KPBX studios before to talk with Vern about various things related to Coeur d'Alene Summer Theater. This is an extraordinary situation, so everything is just a bit different here. We are having our virtual conversation. So, Chuck, welcome.
Thanks, Jen. Thanks for having me on here.
It's our pleasure. What would have been going on at Coeur d'Alene Summer Theater this week if we were under a normal kind of regime?
Well, we actually had scheduled for this weekend, for Friday and Saturday night, we would have been presenting a season preview concert on board the Mishinock on Lake Coeur d'Alene. That's what we would have been doing if things were as they were before the pandemic crisis came up. And on top of that, we would have been hard at work planning for and working towards our summer season that was going to move back to North Idaho College after a six-year hiatus from there.
Mm-hmm. And how many shows typically are in your season?
Classically, in the last 5-6 years, we've had three at the Kroc Center, and before that, we were having four main stage shows a summer, and that was also the plan for this year. We were to have four main stage shows at North Idaho College this coming summer.
All right. And of course, our best laid plans sometimes get pretty drastically waylaid and changed. And so here we are.
Yes.
Now, before we get into what you actually are going to be doing in short order here, how have you guys been managing to keep the home fires burning, so to speak?
Well, that's a large challenge. Ticket sales came to an abrupt halt. We then had to move our summer 2020 season. We moved it in its entirety to the summer of 2021, doing our best to communicate with our patrons and our season ticket holders, letting them know everything's going to be back to normal is our hope by summer 2021. So that's a big project we're doing right now, is getting all of those season tickets moved to the following summer. And our patrons have been wonderful and understanding. Of course, you know, nobody could have predicted this to happen. And so that's where we are keeping the doors open. And part of that endeavor is, you know, we have monthly expenses that don't go away just because we're not producing a show. So we are actually on doing a lot of things just to pay the bills, keep those doors open. And that's what this weekend's concert is. It's the first, what we hope will be a few virtual concerts where someone will watch a group of performers on their computer presenting individual songs and some duets and trios and the like.
And that brings us to the technical challenge that that sort of virtual performance provides. There have been lots of organizations who have done it in various ways. How did Coeur d'Alene Summer Theater approach it?
Well, we try to go with what those of us that are here know. And I'm lucky enough, and we're lucky enough, that my wife has a business where she does online webinars and seminars, training different things. And so we had some of that know-how, thanks to the fact that I'm married to her, to as far as streaming. It takes specific types of, you want a robust web connection, you want certain types of cameras and lighting. And luckily, I had all of those at my disposal at this time, and plus her expertise. And then just some performers and singers, actors, piano players that are willing to jump in and do this.
Is there any way that you could give us a sense of, I assume that there has been some rehearsal already of the material for the concert, of just how that works, who is where? And I think maybe a question that's on a lot of people's minds is when you start getting into even duets and trios, any kind of ensemble work, how in heaven's name does it all stay together?
Well, we're doing it as simply as possible. I have watched groups around the country try to do musical collaboration from varying locations, and the technology doesn't really exist to make that happen in a smooth and professional manner. I know we see these virtual choirs and these groups that have performed from various locations, but what it requires for that to happen is folks are singing or playing their instrument to a click track and recording it. And then somebody takes all of these various recordings and edits them together to make the final product. We've seen these virtual choirs on Facebook and around the internet. That is very time consuming, very expensive, or you just have someone who's adept at doing it. We chose not to do that. So when you see a performance, it's going to be people in the same room. We're practicing social distancing as much as possible. Our piano player is going to be wearing a mask, and our singers are only taking their masks off to perform. The way our concert's going to be set up, we've got about 9 selections that we're performing live at the location. In this case, it's at my house. And then we have 8 or 9 pre-recorded selections that folks from around the country have sent us. Favorite Coeur d'Alene Summer Theater performers from past years, and folks like that. And so the concert will be a mixture of some of those pre-recorded performances and the live events actually happening at my house.
That sounds very smart on your part to do it that way, because that, I think, does ensure, as you said, the simplest way of getting a really good performance.
And we're hoping that it raises some funds. We're selling, you know, tickets, of course, not very expensive tickets, but we wanted to put on something that was as high a quality as humanly possible with the current environment. And we don't have a lot of things like video editors at our disposal. Those types of services are very expensive, and rightfully so. It's time consuming and requires a lot of tech know-how. So we're doing it as simple as possible. We did a dry run through of everything Saturday night, and it all looked and sounded great. I think people are going to be very pleasantly surprised by how high quality the performances are and what the stream will look like. Now, there are some limitations. If the end user, the person watching, doesn't have a robust internet connection themselves, it'll appear lesser quality than someone who has a more high-powered connection to the internet.
Sure. And what's some of the rep that viewers can look forward to on this?
I'm doing a lot of favorites. You'll hear Brandon Michael, who's one of our well-known performers in the area. He's doing Something's Coming from West Side Story. Nick Zoki, who was our Curly in Oklahoma last summer on our stage, he's doing Beautiful City from Godspell. There's a performer doing Morning Glow from Pippin, which is a well-known piece. The lovely Nicole Delbridge is doing a song from Phantom of the Opera. A trio of ladies, Amy DeRozzi, Jennifer Kleinkopf, and Callie McKinney-Cabe, are all CST and local favorites. They're doing the lovely trio from A Chorus Line at the Ballet. A quartet of women are doing some music from the 1950s from a show called The Marvelous One Dress, which actually will be producing in the fall the 1950s pop songs Lollipop and Sugar. You know, that Sugar in the Morning, Sugar in the Evening, things like that. You'll hear some Cockeyed Optimists from South Pacific, we were slated to do Little Shop of Horrors, so our Audrey and Seymour will be doing the song Suddenly Seymour from Little Shop of Horrors, sort of a preview for next summer when we're sure that we'll be back at it producing on stage. So it's quite a good mixture of some popular and some newer stuff.
Yeah, that sounds really excellent. And I think having a cockeyed optimist among the crew is a really fine idea.
I think so. I think that was one of my favorite suggestions from my performers. We sort of gave them a theme. We were presenting the theme. It's escaping me at the moment. Just around the corner is sort of a theme we were using. We wanted some positive anticipation and looking forward to some things. So we asked our singers to mostly stay within that theme if they were able to.
And for summer music theater fans, how can they tap into this concert, which is coming up on the 30th?
Well, if you go to our website or our Facebook page, you can go to, let me get on there right now. You could go right to the ticketing area where you would purchase tickets. And buy the $10 ticket. It's $10 per screen, per device, meaning that if the whole family could sit around their computer and watch this just buy one $10 ticket. Mm-hmm. It just didn't make sense to try to limit it to number of people. It's kind of a different world, isn't it?
Well, I'm sure for the family, we've finally figured out how to get those images up onto the TV screen. So
that, I think a lot of people have, but even if you hadn't, a good computer would be fine.
Yeah, sure.
And you could buy those there. And then sometime Thursday, we'll send you a link with directions and even a little tutorial about how to get the technology working. It's on Zoom. And we picked that program this time out partially because so many people in the world right now are using Zoom to do their online school and their telecommuting from work and that sort of thing. It's just one of the more prevalently used streaming programs right now. So that's why we picked that one.
All right. Chuck Etheridge, thanks for talking with us. And this is really something to look forward to, a little breath of fresh air, albeit virtual air in this case, as we watch a performance by members of the Coeur d'Alene Summer Theater. Well, our best to you and to all of your performers for a successful go on the 30th and for good news ahead in the near future.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate you having me on.
Find out more at cdasummertheater.com. Thanks for listening to Northwest Arts Review. I'm Jim Tevenin. My thanks to our news director, Doug Nedvornik. We're grateful as well for the assistance of Mike Farians, Chuck Etheridge, and the Coeur d'Alene Summer Theater. More from Kevin Brown's album, Heroes and Sparrows, takes us out. Kevin will be part of our virtual summer kids concert on air, online, and on Facebook Friday morning, June 12th at 10 o'clock. He joins fellow KPBX folk producer Caradwyn Irvine Spatz in an hour of folk, Celtic, bluegrass, and original tunes. Join us again next week for another Northwest Arts Review.
You are the reason I've been looking for. Walking through the piney woods down by the shore. The sunlight hit the water and the wind turned toward the north. And I knew you are the reason I've been looking for. And it was easy as a cricket buzz on Labor Day. And I say, goodness knows we're all here for goodness sake. Just a simple song for goodness sake. I found it lying in the reeds down by the lake. Like a baby in a basket, barely awake. It's just a simple song for goodness sake. It's just a song for goodness sake.